All right, we have a full quorum here, so we will start our meeting. First thing, we'll call the meeting to order. Board of Adjustments, Story County, on March 15th. First thing, roll call.
Scarlett.
Here.
McGill.
Here.
Youngberg, absent. Brecky.
Here. Okay, thank you. Next on the agenda, next item, approval of our agenda that we've got in front of us. Board, you've had a chance to look at it. Any additions or subtractions to the agenda? If not, we'll let it stand as presented. Third, in front of you, you've got the meetings from, or the minutes from our last meeting of January 18th. Do I hear any additions, corrections, changes? If not, I'll entertain a motion. All in favor of approving the minutes, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same side. Motion carries. Moving on, just a few comments of how we work this meeting. First off, I'll ask for any public comments on any other item that we have in front that is not on the agenda before we proceed to our the business at hand or any requests that we have. At that time, what we'll do is we'll let our staff, when we move to that, we'll let our staff give their presentation. Then we'll ask for comments from the public and also from the petitioner. Once that's done and also had a chance to rebut, we will also then move on. We'll close the public comment and we'll debate the issue here. As we leave, we'll have a decision for everyone. What I would ask, and I asked earlier, if you would please, if you have not, please sign in at the table. If you're asked and you wish to give a comment, we ask when you approach the podium and give your name, address, so that we've got it down for the record. So, on that note, I'll ask for any public comments other than what we have here in front of us tonight. Hearing none, we'll move on to our first request. It's CUP 01-17, Youth and Shelter Services. Staff?
It says it's conditional use permit 01/17. Youth and Shelter Services is the applicant. They're proposing to acquire the 74-acre property at 5500 240th Street to start a boys' youth addiction treatment facility. The applicant proposes to construct a new treatment facility, living quarters for clients and staff. It would include a parking area, recreational area, and garden area, all to be located on the northwest side of the existing dwelling, which is unoccupied at this time. The plans are to convert the existing dwelling into offices and potentially a welcoming center. Property information, again, the property owner is Doug McKay, 3016 Burnham Ames. Applicant is Andrew Allen, Executive Director for Youth and Shelter Services. They're at 420 Kellogg in Ames. It's in Section 18, Washington Township, unincorporated Story County. The zoning is A1 Agricultural District. It is also located in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, designated as urban residential. There are some natural areas. The city's land use plan map shows the area as village suburban residential. We did have some discussions with the planning staff. There are no active annexation petitions for this particular property, for this area at this time, but they do. I did anticipate that if it did get annexed, that this proposed use would be considered a permitted use in the zoning district that they would designate for this area. The property is about a quarter mile south of the corporate limits of the city of Ames. Youth and Shelter Services was instrumental in working on a text amendment that was approved by the Board of Supervisors January 3 of this year. It was a process that involved adding human services, facilities, and programs to the conditional use permit process, which is in Chapter 90 of the Story County Land Development Regulations. Human services, facilities, and programs are permitted in all districts except for Greenbelt Conservation Districts. They go through the review process that involves conceptual review, which is a sit-down, informal meeting with departments at the county. They proceed on with the conditional use permit process. It involves preparation of a staff report, which goes before the Planning and Zoning Commission, and ultimately comes to the Board of Adjustment for action. The interest that the YSS has in this particular property was made available in the staff report that we prepared when we worked on the staff on the text amendment, again, for the property at 5,500 employees. A little bit of history. The YSS has provided youth addiction treatment services to over 4,300 youth over the last 35 years. Currently located at 712 Burnham Avenue. That's where their male treatment facility is. For females, their facility is located at 804 Kellogg. Both of those are in the city of Ames. They're regulated under the Iowa Department of Public Health, and they're also under the accreditation for the Commission on Accreditation and Rehabilitation Facilities. Aerial map, we're on the south side of Ames, south of Highway 30, west of South Dakota Avenue. It's about 3/4 of a mile west of South Dakota Avenue on 240th Street. South Dakota Avenue is paved. 240th Street is a gravel road. A little closer view, red dots represent existing adjacent dwellings. There's four. One is currently under construction on the east side, which is a 23-acre parcel. But on the northeast side here, there's 2 3-acre parcels, existing dwellings. There's a dwelling to the southeast, which is on a 39-acre parcel. And then directly to the west, there's a 15-acre parcel that also contains a dwelling. There's a few existing dwellings also along South Dakota Avenue, a few to the west. Land use, for the most part, is agricultural in nature, again, with the scattered single-family dwellings. Much of these parcels, though, are wooded. There's some natural areas, natural features on these pieces. But again, predominant land use primarily is agriculture. A little closer view, this is the subject property. It's 74 acres. It's outlined in red for you. Currently, there's an existing access, which is paved. It's a paved driveway, which extends south and southeast to the existing dwelling. There's an accessory structure to the west of that unoccupied single-family dwelling. This is all located, those two buildings are located on the south side of the creek. There's a little pond that's about 1.5 acres that's on the north side of the creek. Mature trees, this is an aerial from about 2012, 2013. Much of the tree areas in the southeast, along the creek on both sides, the western portion of this property is heavily wooded and there's scattered trees throughout the property. This is the representation of the floodplain. It's the blue or the gray area. The creek is called Whirly Creek. So you can see how it meanders through the property. All the proposed improvements are planned to be outside of the creek, outside of the floodplain, outside of the natural areas. This is the zoning map. For the most part, what you're looking at is zoned A1 agriculture. It's in the county. There is a small little portion on the east side, which is adjacent to this parcel, which is zoned AR, which is agricultural residential. For residential purposes, it permits single-family dwellings on a one-acre lot minimum. It also does permit family homes, which are uses that are permitted outright by zoning. There's no special use, conditional use permit that's required, but for persons with mental, physical impairments, foster care, and elder care. Those are things that will be permitted outright under the AR. This is from the Ames River Fringe Plan map. Again, the designation is urban residential natural areas. The land use map of the city shows it village, suburban, residential. Again, proposed buildings would be outside of the creek, outside of the natural areas, and again, outside of the floodplain. Subject property, again, the goal of YSS is to create a campus-type environment where clients can participate in a treatment program in a rural setting. on a large parcel, which would include outdoor recreational activities and sustainable gardening. Concept site plan drawn to show you that will illustrate that. They're also interested in this location due to the proximity to the city of Ames, to take clients to church, volunteering activities, and other related things. The county does allow for 15% of natural occurring resources to be removed with projects such as this, which includes things like grading, the building improvement, improvement for roadway or driveway, or other construction-related activity. And what they're proposing is to remove approximately 5%, a little over 170,000 square foot of area, which would consist of the buildings and parking areas. As I mentioned, there are dead trees along the creek. The heavily areas are to the southeast, southwest. The western portion is fairly wooded as well. The highest elevations on this property are in the southeast, southwest. Elevations are anywhere from 12 to 18 feet higher than where these proposed buildings would be. Also, the grade changes about 1 to 2 feet from the front property line to where the proposed buildings would be. This is a concept drawing that was submitted. Most of the improvements, again, are planned for northwest of the existing dwelling. This is a little detail closer to view. Again, they're proposing to use the same access. No new access is proposed. This is a paved drive. They're showing some of the welcoming features, parking areas, the main treatment facility. Two residential facilities are planned at this time with the first couple of phases. And then as the program gets going, they're planning to add additional two residential living rooms that would be for staff and other clients. They're showing the green space to the west of that for recreation, and then the sustainable gardening activity would be north of that proposed new driveway. And everything would be outside of the creek, outside of the natural areas, and the site photos. This is looking south on South Dakota Avenue, where 240th Street, looking toward the west. Aerial perspective, again, the street on the top is 240th. Shows you the access coming in to the driveway, which extends to the existing unoccupied single family dwelling. And again, it's a detached building that they're planning on using for equipment to maintain the property. The entrance, you can see that it's paved access to drive. We're looking toward the south. We've got photos that we took at different times. These were taken when we were working on the text amendment. And then when we started working on the conditional use permit, we went out a couple times too. So we've got some of this snow. This is the front of the building. It was constructed in 1997. Accessory structure, which again is to the west of the house. This is looking south. Again, this was after we started looking at the conditional use permit. Looking southwest, you see how the grade changes a little bit there, east of the drive. Looking north from the driveway, this is the access area. You can see the apartment buildings in the middle ground in the photo. Those are inside the city of Ames. West of the driveway, with regard to responding to comments that we received from the general public, we did go back out. There was some concerns raised from some of the adjacent property owners with regard to the project. So we have some photos taken with regard to the dwelling to the west, the dwelling to the north, to give you an idea of what would actually be seen from the common property line. So this is the view looking north toward Ames. View of the approximate area of where these buildings would be. Again, you can see that there's some scattered trees, most of those are evergreen type trees. Looking westward, runway, making our trip toward the west, common property line. This is the dwelling to the west. You can see the top of the roof, the gable roof. And then there is in sight a common property line. This area here. Then we got a little closer, panned to the northwest, north, and back northeast. This is the view from that west property line looking northeast toward the proposed project area. Closer view. This is the view of the dwelling to the north. When we got close to the common property line and then turned back toward the southeast, this would be the view toward that direction. And then this is taken from the driveway looking to the southwest. This is from the Chapter 90 Land Development Regulations, and everything really starts with this provision. This is what the Board of Adjustment should be focusing on. I'd like to just read it briefly. It's Chapter 90.01. It states, many land use activities, while not inherently inconsistent with other permitted uses in a particular district, may have significant impacts on the surrounding area. Conditional use permits for such uses allow special conditions to be attached to the development to address those impacts. The conditional use permit process provides for flexibility in identifying the special conditions without making the ordinance unreasonably complicated. The objective of the conditional use permit process is to encourage compatibility of the proposed development with the environment and with existing and future land uses in the area. So this is the standards of approval. These are the things that the Board of Adjustment is to consider when reviewing an application. It says the Board of Adjustment shall review the proposed development for conformance to the following criteria. And the first thing is compatibility. It's important to note that compatibility doesn't necessarily have to mean that it has to be a single-family dwelling. There are other things that are permitted outright in an A1 agricultural district, such as cemeteries. You could do like a private or public horse arena, horse stable. Those things would be permitted outright. And then, of course, there's a list of several things that might be permitted with the granting of a conditional use permit. But things that you are to focus on with regard to compatibility are how the buildings and structures are arranged, how they're operated, what's the context of those buildings in relationship to other buildings on site, other buildings in the area, what kind of natural buffering is taking place, what type of buffering is proposed, whether it's natural or man-made, and then what's the effect or impact of nuisance, what's the effect of additional lighting, noise, light, those types of things. Subject property was chosen by YSS because of its size and the goal really to allow for this rural living experience in an area where there's natural features that would provide some reasonable buffering. And then if large enough, they determined that it was would be beneficial and conducive to the proposed improvements that were planned. For the main buildings, as I said, they're primarily going to be located on the central portion of the 74-acre property. And the goal, again, is to have limited distraction to the road right-of-way, road users, and the nearby properties. Transition, development shall provide for suitable transition and buffering. All proposed improvements are planned for the north side of the creek, outside the floodplain, and the natural areas. They're going to be required to provide 20% additional landscape and green space based on the impervious surface that they're adding, which includes buildings and parking areas. We kind of went through the trees and the grading of the property, and we think that those things are going to help with minimizing buffering. Traffic, the development shall provide for adequate ingress, egress, vehicle, and pedestrian safety, traffic flow, and emergency access. Again, we're using the existing access. They're not requesting a new access off of 240. It's an existing paved driveway, which will help with dust and noise. Currently, there's about 60 annual average daily trips on 240. They anticipate having anywhere from 8 to 12 staff, occasional deliveries, visits from family members. And so the estimate that was provided was anywhere from 24 to 32 vehicle trips to the property. The applicant can apply for a permit to do dust control. That would be through the engineering division.
But we have a condition in place that if the numbers exceed 150 trips on 240th, then that's something that they will be required to provide on that road adjacent to the current and proposed future laws. Signage and lighting should be compatible with the immediate vicinity. An external signage plan to let people know what the use is, but no significant perimeter site type lighting is proposed. They do propose to provide some lighting for walkways and entrances to buildings. With regard to environment, the development shall safeguard environmental and visual resources. We talked about most of this. Improvements planned outside the floodplain. They've got the 20% landscaping requirement to adhere to. They will be required to meet the Iowa Stormwater Management Manual requirements and the SUDIS, the Statewide Urban Design Standards for Erosion Control. It's large enough, too, that they'll be required to have a state stormwater permit, which is the NPDES permit. System for sewage treatment will be through the Iowa DNR because of the size and the number of persons that will be served. So it will be under their permitting process. But no permits with regard to zoning for any of the improvements. Any of those would be the finals would not be issued until those systems are constructed and operational. The second part of the review is the Board of Adjustment concludes that if the Board of Adjustment concludes that all of the above development criteria will be met, it must recommend approval of the application unless it concludes that if completed as proposed, there is a strong probability that the development will not adequately safeguard health, safety, and general welfare. Proposed use of the subject property will initially be a recognized deviation. Currently, it's a 74-acre parcel. There's a house on it that's unoccupied. So initially, this use will be noticed. But much of the activity will occur inside the treatment facility, inside the residential facilities. During the day, they do anticipate using their space for recreational activities and for gardening. As we mentioned, there are four adjacent dwellings. One is currently under construction. We think the grade of the property and the trees will assist with buffering. There is adequate separation distances that ranges from anywhere from 750 to a little over 1,900 lineal feet from the existing adjacent dwellings to the proposed buildings that are planned. And as I mentioned, only one access will be used, the existing access, no new access is planned. With regard to light and air, we don't think that there's going to be a negative impact on adjacent land. We do have a condition in place for dust control. Utilizing unduly increased congestion on the roads or the hazards from fire, flood, or similar dangers. Again, 24 to 32 daily trips are planned to this property. This is a representation of just under half of what the current activity level is. All proposed buildings and site improvements are planned outside the floodplain natural areas. There is a plan to provide sprinkler systems in these buildings, which will be added after. Diminished or impaired established property values on adjoining or surrounding properties. Building improvements are planned to match the design of existing buildings and relate to their site conditions. That's one of the reasons why they chose this property. Through our review process, the assessor's department reviewed it, had no major concerns about the request. We also did just some preliminary checks with some select properties in Ames where they currently occupy or operate. And the properties that we looked at actually showed increases in value from like 2013 to 2016. If you have questions about that, we can provide more information on that. It should be consistent with the land development regulations, the C2C plan. And we went through a pretty extensive text amendment process. The text amendment process that we went through, we did look at other counties with regard to what they were doing. Webster County permits through a conditional use permit process in an A1 agricultural district, in a TA transitional agricultural district, things like chemical dependency or mental health facilities, Polk County for nursing homes, protected living, shelter care. Some of these things are permitted outright in residential districts, mixed-use districts. If it's over 8 people, though, they require a conditional use permit. Clinton County for physical and mental disabilities, group homes, again, conditional use permit in their agricultural districts and suburban residential and residential, urban residential districts, conditional use permits. Interagency review, we did communicate with engineering staff. This is where the condition came from. Again, if they are to exceed the 150 vehicle trips on 240th, there's a requirement that they provide a dust control adjacent to the dwellings from South Dakota Avenue west to the site. Finally, development had a question about the recovery home solar lifestyle program. That's something that's not going to occur on this site. A lot of questions with regard to proposed improvements, the phasing of the project. Environmental health provided information about the role of the Iowa DNR. They also provided information about the time of transfer of closing out, cleaning out the existing septic system. Outreach project manager had a request, which is a condition that no improvements occur within the floodplain. This will be provided on a deed restriction. General public comments, there were a few. First of all, we did send notices February 21, March 3 of this year. We also sent information to the City of Ames and the City of Gilbert. On the 23rd of February, we received a call from a property owner on the east side who had questions about the text amendment process. I wanted to make sure that the City of Ames conditions that they were suggesting were not a part of the current ordinance, and we confirmed that they were not. On the 24th, we received a phone call from an attorney who was interested potentially in representing the property owner to the west, who requested a copy of the site plan sketch, which we provided. On the 27th, we received a follow-up phone call, further inquiry about the CUP that was being requested, the county review process, and he stated that he was still considering whether or not to represent the property owner. On the 27th, we received some information from the property owner to the north. There were 28 questions, various questions related to fencing of the property, the subject property, police protection, eloping of clients and alerting of neighbors, property values, liability insurance, annual reviews, agency operations, questions on septic system, traffic estimates, fire department, and project phasing. The planning department staff and the applicant did provide responses to those questions. We also received a letter the day of the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting from the City of Ames. They requested that the Planning and Zoning Commission adopt certain conditions with regard to the action. The things that they were asking for were a 40-foot road right-of-way. An agreement required that the property, or that the applicant, agree to future annexation, that they agree to future assessments with regard to the infrastructure improvements, and that a blanket easement be provided. They mentioned that there were some studies and the likelihood of sanitary sewer extending through this property. So it's important to note that the city outright was not opposing it. They just were requesting these items from the applicant and to kind of get to the future use activity for this area, get it ready for urbanization is what they were referring to. We went through this letter in great detail, and the Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend approval. They did not support those conditions suggested by the City of Ames. At the meeting, there were three property owners, including the attorney representing one of the property owners who spoke in opposition. There were three property owners at the meeting who spoke in support. There was one property owner who spoke but was more neutral on the request. On the 9th of March, we received another letter from an attorney representing the property owner to the west. The letter was made a part of the packet. It was on the agenda center. It covers things like impact of use on surrounding areas, traffic, environmental questions, concerns, fire and safety. And it requested the Board of Adjustment to support the Ames conditions and 5 additional conditions. Those conditions related to these items. Services should be limited to under page 17. Notifying property owners with regard to changes. That's something that would happen if they decided to amend their request. This is something that the county will do. Fencing and planting. Should be provided, plantings be replaced, anything that's required with the 20% requirement for impervious surfaces, those things, if we have plant materials that die, that's going to be something that we're going to request the applicant to replant. Question about building lighting, and then questions about process. They thought that the issue with regard to the septic system and the DNR permitting should take place before the conditional use permit. That's not how the process works. If the conditional use permit is approved, the applicant will be required to submit a detailed site development plan, details on the zoning permit for all the improvements that are proposed, and we'll go through a thorough review at that time. And as I said, final zoning permit will not be issued until the improvements are installed. On the same day, March 9, we received a letter from the property owner to the north addressing safety of their family, potential crime, liability, property value, questions about the septic system, fire protection, water service, and they were suggesting conditions be added to the 3 that that the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended, which involved text alert to neighbors when clients have low liability insurance, sharing operation policies, agency records, law enforcement security, biannual conditional use permit review, questions about sex offenders, they not be permitted, limiting services to youth 19 and under, limiting construction of permanent buildings, parking, and related improvements within 300 feet of adjacent dwellings. And again, planning staff and the applicant did provide responses to those comments or questions. So at the March 1st Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, after hearing from the staff, after hearing from the applicant, after hearing from the general public, based on information that was provided, in the staff report, the analysis that was provided, and the information that was provided by YSS, the Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend approval with a 6-0 vote with 3 conditions. Those conditions are: 1, the applicant shall provide dust control on 240th Street adjacent to existing and future dwellings if daily traffic counts, 2, from the subject property contributing to exceeding 150 per day on 240th Street. And at any time, the planning staff can request the applicant to hire an engineer to study the traffic if there are concerns that that arise. 2, no proposed lighting shall be installed near a common property line of an adjacent property containing a single-family dwelling or in other locations that cause the light to extend or trespass beyond a common property, unless it's agreed to by an adjacent property owner. And 3, dealt with the development in the floodplain. That's going to be permitted. They're going to be required to show this notation on the site development plan and provide a deed restriction to keep development out of the floodplain. So that brings us to the alternatives, which is the Planning and Zoning Commission is recommending that the Board of Adjustment approve alternative number two, which is the Story County Board of Adjustment recommends approval of the conditional use permit, which is 01-17, with the conditions that I just went through, those three conditions. And with that, I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Or any questions to the staff at this point? Okay, before I open it up, what I would request, though, is that we keep our comments to 10 minutes so that we can keep the meeting moving along. So on that, I'll answer who's here to speak for the applicant.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks to the Board of Adjustments for hearing the conditional use permit. My name is Andrew Allen, 420 Kellogg Avenue. I'm the president and CEO of YSS. Let me just take a minute to tell you a little bit about YSS. We've got a 40-year history, having been headquartered in Ames, Iowa for the entire duration of the organization's life. We're currently about 400 employees, about a $20 million budget in seven communities. We work in three major areas, prevention, treatment, and transition. You know, my perspective, of course, I'm biased because I'm the CEO, but we're one of the most comprehensive youth-serving agencies in the state. You know, we focus on collaboration and the comprehensive nature of our services. We've been providing residential treatment to kids across the state of Iowa for more than 35 years. Jerry alluded to the fact that we've treated 4,300 kids. I happen to be one of them. So I went through the program in the mid-90s. I've been sober today for 21 years. It's part of the reason that I accepted this role as CEO about 18 months ago. The program currently is located in an existing neighborhood north of downtown Ames in two houses that were purchased more than 30 years ago that have been retrofitted to provide treatment to kids. One program for females up to 15 girls, one for males up to 15 males. As I came into this role and tried to assess what our opportunities were, I was laser-focused on our mission. The mission of YSS is to create hope and opportunity by putting kids first. And as I took a look at the facilities that we run our programs in, I identified some opportunity to really upgrade facilities to provide, essentially world-class level of care for these kids. I've got a very nice office at 420 Kellogg. It's in the old municipal building. It's a building that I'm very, very proud of. The residential facilities we're providing some of these services are worn. Again, 4,300 kids through these programs. They were never necessarily built for residential treatment. So the opportunity presented itself to consider a new location. We really said, what would be best to provide the level of care needed for these kids? And we decided to look for a rural adjacent property, something in the country, but close enough to town, as Jerry alluded to be close for employees, be close for volunteers to get the kids connected to activities. We're also a very community-based organization. We came upon Doug McKay and Juana McKay's property, 75 acres. It's got just the right mix of natural assets and the ability to remain secluded to support what we really feel like, again, is going to be world-class addictions treatment for kids. So while we hope to take the program to the next level, this is a program we've been essentially running for over 35 years. One of the big issues that I want to address right up front is stigma. I think that, you could look at me and not know that I was sober 21 years or that I was a drug addict, alcoholic. It's easy for me to share that story now with so much distance between me as a kid and me where I am today. Having said that, the face of addiction is all over. You know, the opioid epidemic, you know, that we're hearing about on the coast is coming to Iowa. We're reading about it in the paper on a regular basis. I'm convinced that there are things that we can do on the front end from a prevention standpoint that we'll continue to do here locally, but that there's going to be a group of kids that will continue to need treatment. Had the program not been there for me, had I not, you know, been in a position to turn my life around with the services that I received from YSS, there's no doubt, you know, I'd be a drain on society today versus a contributing member. So I've got three kids that I want to share. I want to share their story just real quickly. Again, we'll try to limit it to the 10 minutes. Just to put the face on addiction, two kids who are currently in our program at various stages and one who graduated in December. So let's just start with Weston from Carroll.
My name is Weston. I'm 16. So a little bit about my story. I was introduced to marijuana about 13 years old. It was always just a social thing, you know, on the weekends, maybe like once a month or so, till like eighth grade-ish. And then I started smoking more, you know, like it turned to like every weekend. It was still only a social thing. I was never like wanting it or needing it till about freshman year, until sophomore year. It kind of got more heavier, I guess you could say. I was smoking every day, skipping school. Like, I was dying, doing all this stuff. So my mom had about enough of it, sent me to like an outpatient. Did that, failed that. Then she didn't give me that much options. You know, she sent me to YSS, the parent place there. And that's why I'm here right now. And it's a good treatment, you know. Like, I'm getting the stuff that I need to know to stay sober and hopefully taking that when I get out. But the way, like, Andrew showed us the new building and stuff and what his plan is and stuff, and it looks way better than what we have right now. You know, what they're saying about building the new houses and whatever structures and stuff, and then having, you know, growing and stuff, it all just looks like way more fun than being cooped up in a house all day, like a tiny house, and not being able to go outside or do a lot of things, you know. So the way that he's hoping to get it set up and stuff, it just looks way better, you know. Like, I'm really hoping that happens, you know, for future kids that have this problem and stuff and are able to go there and be able to have these opportunities a lot better than what I've had it and what other kids have had it, you know. So that's all I really got to say.
Did Mason from West Des Moines?
Well, I'm Mason. I'm 18. I'm from West Des Moines. I've been at YRH, the house I'm at, for about 75 days now. But it started when I was about 13-ish. I started smoking pot. I don't know, it was just a fun thing at first. All my family was doing it. My cousins were doing it. All my friends were doing it. So I was like, okay, why not? So I did it, and it felt like it filled this hole inside of me that I've had all my life. And after that hole was filled, I thought, well, this is a solution. So I just kept doing that. And at the end of eighth grade, get a 45-day suspension from school for buying pot at school. And then, so I get past that 45 days without using it. And once that 45 days is up, I just keep going, smoking every day by myself, completely isolated from everybody. I really had nothing but the pot. And then eventually just turned into pills, escalated into pretty much anything you can think of. And it was a terrible experience, honestly. I'm still struggling today. It's just, it's not that I'm sober today. That's the beauty of it, because I'm at YRH, and that is helping me a lot, because you learn a lot about yourself while you're there. You learn all your character defects, and it turns out I'm not just a drug addict. Like, there's a lot more to it than just being a drug addict, and I would have never known this stuff if it wasn't for YSS. But I think it's a great idea to... Andrew showed us the property. It's a beautiful place, and I think it would be great for the future kids, because I know at the house right now it's a little cooped up and tight, and there's a lot of arguments because we're all so close together all the time, you know. But it would be great if we had all this property where we could walk around and get some actual fresh air, not have to just be in the same place all the time, you know. Yeah.
And Max from Nova.
I'm Max. I'm 17. My drug use and drinking started around the 8th grade. And I just did it because I liked how it felt. And then I started doing it a lot. And I would start doing it before school and something at school, drinking at school. And I got into a little bit of trouble with the law, and I got put on probation for stealing a bottle of wine. And then that was at the beginning of the summer, and I was on probation for most of the summer, and I had 20 hours of community service and was working that off while still smoking and drinking. And then my parents realized that I wasn't doing anything productive with my life. And they decided I needed help. I didn't think I did. Now that I'm sober and have been through YRH, I realize how quickly my life is going nowhere. And YRH has given me the opportunity to make something of my life. And it's a great program for me. With that being said, a new place would be awesome, especially on this beautiful property with just nice outside nature-y.
That's the base of the kids that we're serving. These are kids. These aren't criminals. These kids suffer from, you know, substance abuse, which is a, you know, classified mental health diagnosis, and they're getting treatment. I think about people that have cancer, and everybody kind of rallies around them, and they do fundraisers, and, you know, everybody's very supportive. You're a family with a kid who's suffering from drug addiction, and you're isolated. You don't know where to turn. And so we hope to be a light within, you know, what is a serious issue, and, again, continue to provide hope and opportunity. My final point is just that while we're comprehensive and we're collaborative, we're also community-based. That's probably one of the most important characteristics of YSS. We are in the communities where we provide services. We're headquartered in Ames, guys. I've got a board of directors. I've got a foundation board. We've been neighbors to that North Ames, north of downtown community, for over 35 years. One of our closest neighbors is Kate Gregory. She's, you know, when Warren Madden retired from Iowa State, Kate Gregory helped Miles Davis. Kate Gregory helped take some of their responsibility. So she's, you know, two or three in charge at Iowa State. As we approached her and asked for a letter of recommendation, as a neighbor, she provided one. I gave that to the neighbors. And as she found out that we might be moving the program, she was distraught because she appreciates these kids so much. So she couldn't be here today. We did ask her to come to both planning and zoning and this meeting. She's a busy lady. She provided her cell phone just as a letter of recommendation and an endorsement for the program. We'll continue to be good neighbors. I met with all of the neighbors except for John, who's here. He was out of town before the notices went out, talked about the program, talked about what it was that we wanted to do. And I'm encouraged by the fact that I feel like there's multiple neighbors that are supportive of this project. We're not supportive of the conditions from the city, and we feel like we've addressed the majority of the questions from the neighbors. So we're excited about this, you know, not only at YSS, but I think that this is going to put Ames, Iowa, Story County, Iowa as a state on the map as it relates to a different way of providing addictions treatment for kids, and couldn't be more excited. So I'll share with you, I've got some packets that have letters of recommendation from, like I said, Kate Gregory, from the Chief of Police of the City of Ames, and some other folks, as well as our annual report. We'll be happy to answer any questions.
Board, any questions to Andrew on the actual the facility itself, things of that nature.
I have some questions for Andrew. Can you tell me, Andrew, how many male youth will be housed at this new facility?
Phase one, we've got 32 beds. We might roll out, you know, slower than that. Currently, we're at 15 beds.
Okay, and what ages? What's the parameters?
Yeah, right now we're licensed up to 18, I believe. We feel a need, especially as we sat down and talked to Iowa State, for instance, and sat down with Kate to say, what do you think of this project? There is a need to continue to provide support for kids into early, you know, adolescence. We serve kids, and when we say youth, we serve them up to 25. So if you think about brain development, while you may look fully physically mature, males' brains continue to develop into their mid-20s. And so we do feel like there's a potential opportunity to support kids into their mid-20s, especially in partnership with Iowa State.
How many of these types of facilities in the rural setting are there that you know of?
I would say more in the rural setting than not in Iowa, maybe. Or maybe it's a good mix. Gordon and Sioux City is kind of right on the edge of town. Francis Lauer is a shelter, so similar to us, but a little bit different. They're on the edge of Mason City. You know, Cornerstone is in Ankeny, but kind of on the edge of town in Ankeny. Probably when they built that facility, it was on the edge of town, rural adjacent.
And you mentioned Kate Gregory as a neighbor of the current facility. Have you had any concerns from other property owners that are around the current house?
No.
No. No. Okay. I've seen your facility. I used to work at United Way, so I have been there many times. How long do the residents typically stay?
90 to 120 days. You know, what we really feel like is we want to provide the right level of care at the right intensity for the right duration, but typically 90 to 120 days.
And will you maintain the current facility that you have, too, in Ames?
Yeah, so we think, and Jerry alluded to kind of like phase three or four, as it relates to halfway house or step down. I really hope that Story County and Ames become a destination for recovery. And so some of these kids that come may decide to stay. Ames has low unemployment. We've got good schools, and I think there's lots of opportunity here locally. So potentially transition out of an intensive residential program into a halfway house.
Okay. Those were my questions.
Very good. Pretty much covered the rest of it. So any other questions for Andrew? Thank you. At this point in time, I'll ask for comments from the public. Like I said, try to limit your comments to 10 minutes. And as you leave these, please address the podium, give your name and your address so we've got it for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is Richard Lozier. I'm an attorney with Bell & McCormick in Des Moines. My address is 666 Walnut Street, Suite 2000. I want to say initially that the stories that we heard from these three young men are familiar to me as a parent and as a brother and an uncle, and I support the program in every way. But we do have issues with respect to the land use and the operations of the facility, and those are the things that I want to address. I represent Jim and Teresa Polinski, who live at 5600 240th Street in the property immediately west of the proposed facility. Their property is 15 acres in size, and they have a very nice home on the property. The first thing that I want to address is that I believe that the application is premature. What is submitted in the form of the application is not a plan, but it's a conceptual drawing. It lacks details. There are no dimensions. The layout of the buildings are imprecise and can't be determined with any confidence. Section 90.02, subsection 1 of the ordinance requires a plan to be submitted with the application. But this is not a plan. It's a concept drawing and nothing more. There's not enough information to know whether this project complies with other requirements of the ordinance. It would be premature to issue a conditional use permit on the basis of this application and conceptual drawing. In addition, there are inconsistencies in the application and the responses provided by the applicant. In the application, the facility is defined or described as a male youth addiction treatment facility. The YSS narrative refers to an adolescent addiction treatment and treatment of youth. The applicant apparently relies on a United Nations definition of youth, stating it intends to offer treatment to persons up to age 24. And for the first time, we heard Mr. Allen make specific reference to his desire to expand the program to treat people up to age 24, perhaps 25. I've handed out, I gave to Mr. Moore the United Nations definition of youth, and I believe you have that material. In the box on the left side, it says United Nations, for statistical purposes, defines those persons between the ages of 15 and 24 as youth, without prejudice to other definitions by member states. Well, we're not compiling statistics here. These are individuals that we're dealing with, and the compilation of statistics is fine for the United Nations, and as you read down in that box, it refers to the percentage of youth between ages of 15 and 24 as a percentage of the world population. It also addresses the number of youth ages 15 to 24 that are infected with HIV, and 76% of them are women or female. So we feel that this definition of youth goes well beyond what was represented to us initially in the application and well beyond what is appropriate for this facility. Iowa law defines a person who attains his or her majority at age 18 to be an adult. At that age, the person is no longer considered to be a youth. Another issue that is not resolved, as far as I can tell, is whether YSS intends to to treat sexual people who are registered on the sex registry as an offender. In communications from one of the neighbors, the applicant was asked point blank, will registered sex offenders be allowed in the program? And the applicant evaded the question and said, it is our discretion as to whom we accept into the program. We will not accept clients who we think would be anyone at risk for any offense. And I think by refusing to say that they won't accept registered sex offenders, they implicitly acknowledge that they may be admitted. If they won't say no, the answer is yes. Registered sex offenders may be admitted into the program. And again, I think that that's an issue, an important issue, that needs to be clarified before a conditional use permit is issued. The second issue I want to address is that the text amendment to the zoning ordinance was approved by the Board of Supervisors on January 3rd to allow human services facilities and programs to be permitted if granted a conditional use permit. That's a very broad definition. It could mean almost anything. And I would also note that that the change in the ordinance is still not posted, as of yesterday, is still not posted on the Story County website as a part of the ordinance. But it's pretty evident that the ordinance amendment was adopted without specific notice to my client or to anyone else who was adversely affected by this project. It appears that the ordinance was amended to accommodate the specific interests of the applicant and the landowner without any regard to the specific interests of my client and other neighbors. Third, in my experience with zoning matters, customarily on projects of this magnitude, the applicant confers with neighbors to explain the proposal and provides an opportunity to feedback from neighbors. And this normally is handled through the staff of the Planning and Zoning Department. That has not happened. And to fully appreciate the level of opposition to this plan, I think it's incumbent on the Board of Adjustment to require such conferences before it takes action on the pending application. Fourth, the project does not apply with applicable standards contained in the ordinance. Section 90.04 sub 1A provides that proposed buildings or use shall be constructed, arranged, and operated to be compatible with the character of the zoning district and the immediate vicinity. As previously described, the subject property is a 74-acre parcel with a single-family dwelling on it. My client's property is a 15-acre parcel, also with a single-family dwelling. My client's property has a 0.4-mile common border with the subject property. There are other parcels in the vicinity that are single-family residences on substantial acreages. The proposal to put 48-bed residential addiction treatment facility and staff in barracks-style accommodations on this property is in no way compatible with the characteristics of the existing neighborhood in the zoning district. If you recall the aerial photograph that was shown by Mr. Moore, it showed four initial buildings being constructed right along the driveway, very close to the driveway, that my clients would drive on to access their property, with the potential for four additional such buildings that look, on the display, they look to be very similar to a barracks. And that is not consistent with the character of the neighborhood. Section 90.041A also addresses the use of the proposed facilities. And with respect to use, the residential treatment facility for 48 youth and staff is very, very different from the single-family environment of other houses in the immediate area. Fifth, we believe that if this property is developed as proposed, that it will diminish the value of adjacent properties. It just makes common sense that an institutional facility housing 48 youth and staff is less desirable as a neighbor than having a single-family home on 74 acres. We believe it affects the value and the marketability of adjacent properties. At the Planning and Zoning Commission hearing 2 weeks ago, there was a gentleman who spoke, and if he's here, he can speak for himself, but as I recall, his statement was that he had had two offers on his property in the general area that were withdrawn when the prospective purchasers learned of this proposed facility. Sixth, there has been inadequate preparation for fire protection. A letter was sent by email to Story County on March 8th from the Chief of Police of the West Story Fire Agency in Kelly, Iowa. and like to just read a part of it. I've been informed of the facility being proposed and have a few concerns on the project. My first concern is the availability of water to fight a fire. We are a volunteer department with limited resources of equipment and personnel. We have one pumper and one tanker with a total of 3,000 gallons of water. With mutual aid, we can call for additional tankers. But I was wondering, what was the plan, i.e. hydrants? My second concern would be the size of the building. How many levels? Single story, multi-level? My concern here would be equipment to fight a large structure fire. Any information on the project would be greatly appreciated. So it's evident that as of March 8th, just a week ago, he did not have even the basic information about this project. And Section 90.04 sub 2C provides that the conditional use permit shall not be approved if there is a strong possibility the development will increase the hazard from fire. It's evident that the fire chief did not know what was going on here. So I believe that inadequate preparations have been made with respect to fire protection, and without additional information, the Board of Adjustment should not assume that there will be adequate fire protection. The applicant has the burden of proof with respect to this issue and all issues, and simply has failed to meet it. So in conclusion, we request that the application be denied. If you decide not to deny the application, we request that it be remanded back to staff and that action be deferred on the application until there is full dialogue among neighbors and the applicant and planning and zoning staff so that we understand fully how the facility will be used, particularly with respect to fire protection, the age of the clients to be served, and whether registered sexual predators will be allowed. If you are determined to take action now, then we request additional conditions to be established. The conditions proposed by staff, we believe, are superficial at best and don't address the real concerns of the neighbors. Dust control, of course. Lighting, yes, of course. Boundary of the floodplain, yes, but those aren't enough. And so we request additional conditions. And I've provided a list of those conditions, which I believe you have. First, that no one over the age of 18 can be treated at the facility. No registered sex offenders can be treated at the facility. Adequate fire protection must be assured. There should be coordination with the City of Ames with respect to the potential future annexation of the area. And I would note in that regard that the letter to Mr. Moore from the city was dated February 28th, and he said it was received on March 1st, the day of the P&Z hearing. And Mr. Moore said that those issues were fully considered. But the issues described in the letter from the City of Ames are complex. It requires considerable detail and analysis to consider the future land use planning in that area. I mean, it seems pretty obvious that the City of Ames at some point wants to annex that area of the county, and it likely will happen. And so to go off and approve a facility like this without coordination with the City of Ames, I think, is a serious mistake and should not be allowed. Fifth, we've provided these additional conditions in our letter dated March 9th, which is part of your information packet. And John Moore, who I believe is here today, has also provided additional conditions, which we fully support. That concludes my remarks. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Nope. No.
Thank you. Next.
My name is Mark Harmison. I'm at 2060 South 500. We're the non-adjacent property to the west, which is to say we're across the cornfield.
Would it be possible, Jerry, for you to put up the map of the properties, please?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah. Thank you.
We are
the bus.
Oh.
Okay.
Thank you.
And Mr. Lazier, which one is your client's property? That one? Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I love using technology sometimes. So I have a few points, and I'll try to stick to 10 minutes. This should not be any problem. I did a quick search using the assessor's website last night. There are over 500 parcels within a quarter mile of the current YSS facility. There are 9 within the same perimeter of this proposed facility. If we're worried about impact on neighbors, the numbers just, to me, don't seem to add up, unless there's a heck of a problem in downtown Ames that I've never heard about. When it comes to maintaining a rural setting, if that's our goal as people who live out here, it seems to me that the YSS proposal is probably the best way to achieve that, because the alternative is that Mr. McKay sells his property to someone who wants to subdivide it, which will immediately trigger annexation. When we bought our property in 2001, we understood that the property was located in an area targeted by the City of Ames for urban residential development. We never had any illusions that it was going to stay farmland forever. We obviously would like to forestall developments as long as possible, but I just, know it's going to happen eventually, and that's fine. That's why we're planting trees around the perimeter of our property. I think most of the concerns expressed about this project, and I've read everything that the Polinskys and their attorney has sent in, and also John Moore's comments and questions. I've also spoken with both of them personally. I spoke with John at quite some length, and we had a good conversation about it. I think a lot of those concerns would apply to this property regardless, this project, regardless of where it was located. Some of them are maybe about its rural setting, but most of them are, questions you're going to have about a project like this no matter where you put it. Frankly, the request from the Polinskys to have the city's conditions added to this conditional use permit seem kind of counterproductive to me if they want to maintain a rural lifestyle, because those conditions would facilitate faster annexation, which again is something I'm not sure we really want to have. The other alternative uses for this property, even if it wasn't sold, I believe that the zoning would allow a hog lot to be put there, which would be far less desirable to all of us than this facility under any conditions. And YSS is not an unknown quantity in this community. We know what kind of organization they are. We know what kind of facilities they run. There's ample evidence as to their ability to be a good neighbor. I personally know several people who live within the vicinity. In fact, one person I know lives directly across the street in the apartment building from one of the current 2 facilities, and she says they're wonderful neighbors. So while I really deeply respect the concerns that my fellow neighbors have about this project, and I'm glad that they've had answers to many of them. I know those answers aren't satisfactory to them. I appreciate that. But my wife, Lisa, and I support this project because we know from personal experience how badly the state needs mental health treatment facilities. And when you have to have a loved one, you know, go far away, go out of state, go to some expensive private facility that insurance may or may not cover, you know what a burden that can be. We support the project because when Andrew told us about the rural lifestyle and we read about that, about how they wanted to, you know, have the kids working outside, that fits in with what, you know, what our values are. That's why we live out in the country. And we think if kids who are struggling can have that opportunity, they'll have a better chance of recovery. We support the project because we understand that substance abuse is a disease and not a character flaw. The kids in this program would, I'm sure, rather not be here. And they would like to get out as soon as they can. I was extremely lucky. I won the genetic lottery. I had great parents, but there, for the grace of God, go I. And I did plenty of things when I was your age that would have gotten me into as much trouble as you've been in. I just got lucky enough not to get caught most of the time. And finally, we support this project because if we had a child who needed this help, we would want somebody to have said yes.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Susan Owen, and I am Emily and Alan Munson's daughter. I currently live at 3708 Grand Avenue, although I grew up at 401, excuse me, Dartmoor Road, which is at the bottom of the screen. My parents own, I moved there when I was in fourth grade. It's a rural area. We bought it because of the trees and playing by the creek and all of that. So that was in 1974. They have 60 acres there. My son Henry has grown up there. My kids have grown up there. I was looking through this folder about 10 years ago. The city wanted to, they proposed putting a sewer line through Worley Creek, and this is full of the fight adamantly against that with flora and fauna reports from the thing. Our concern is obviously not, I support YSS. I have very close family that have been in treatment. It has nothing to do with, for me, with YSS's mission, any of that. Our concern is when you've invested, you've seen your parents grow up there and work their tails off to provide and to have land that's going to be passed on generational, and those property owners have bought land with a rural setting, and it's not well thought out. The sewer, if it was 16 beds, if a 32-bed facility goes in, and when the fire department comes back and says, we cannot, you know, fight a fire legitimately, it has to be annexed, then that opens the door to the city to say, well, see, now we have to get water to them. Then I'm pretty certain we'll be back in the same boat we were with saying, don't go down Worley Creek, we've come up with alternatives, and they will do a clear cut down, and it destroys the thing. It destroys the integrity of the area. And so I would hate to see, I think the city is, I don't trust the city for a multitude of reasons, but I think that they are kind of using YSS as a scapegoat because they've obviously always wanted to build south. And the development, if you talk to developers, has not been to the south, it's been to the north. And so I would just caution you to look at this not as, you know, obviously we are in extreme support of YSS. I think your mission's fabulous. I think a rural setting would be great. Do I think this is the location? No. And there are plenty of other places that have existing water, that have existing fire, you know, access to things that could be explored, and approving something without fully realizing that you say yes to this and it opens up this. So just be aware. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Next.
Jerry, does the property have a well on it, or do they have city water?
believe
it's rural water.
Okay. Thank you. It has a well. Okay.
The current house is served by both a well and Zeke.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm John Moore. I am the property just to the east, the most northward red dot right there. And I share about an 800-foot property line with the subject property. First of all, just a little bit about my background. I grew up in a family. We have seven of us that are kids. All of us were either adopted or came out of orphanages and so forth. So I understand the need for social services and in general, I definitely support them. As far as YSS is concerned, I actually was a mentor for them years ago. I'm still in contact with my mentor kid. And as such, again, I support in general what they're trying to do. However, when it comes to drug use and drug rehabilitation, I've seen both sides of this. Currently, I have two nephews who have been in drug facilities, one of which graduated and did really well. The other one is in jail. And for various and sundry things, including violence and theft. So there's definitely two sides to this particular case right here. And I think, you know, we've talked a lot about the positive things that can come from this, but there's also a negative side to this. And as such, I don't feel that that the negative side of this has been addressed sufficiently by either YSS or the county insofar as its impact on the neighbors. And in my public comments, which I think you should have right here, I had concerns in four different areas, the first of which was physical safety for our family. Secondly is for property, another crime. Third is property value sustainment, and just in general, I believe there's been kind of a lack of information regarding the future projects of this, and to make sure that what you guys up there, if you so decide to approve this, that we know exactly where things are going to be sited on there, how big they're going to be, and looking down the road, are they contained to where they are on the site map now, or do they have the ability and authority to move that around? Okay. So with that being said, some other conditions that I would like to see added to this project. And before I can really support things, some of these, if not all of these, are things that need to be added. And first and foremost, right off the bat, is physical safety and elopement. This was not addressed, and it hasn't been addressed or really even acknowledged by YSS that this happens. If you look back from their own statistics right there, currently in their facility with 18 students that they have right now, they're averaging about an elopement per month in there. And that's with 18. And now if you're going to go up to 48, you can expect that number to increase. And given the geographical position, in particular of my property right there, if you draw a line from their property to town, it comes right through my backyard, right through my shop. Okay? And what we have asked in here is to have just a basic text alert system. If somebody is unaccounted for, send us a text message. That's all we're asking. And then when you find them and they're accounted for, tell us. That doesn't seem like that's too much. But in the response from YSS, they've completely turned that down. And I'll read their response to that. It says, YSS assesses for client risk, including elopement, not only at admission but throughout their stay. The client program will be modified, including the restriction of client movement if there is an increased risk to themselves or others. YSS has an on-call staff or an on-call system ensuring that supervisors and licensed professionals are available to the staff and youth at all times 24/7. If there is a risk to the external community identified, we will utilize our local law enforcement to ensure the safety of all involved in the surrounding community. If the risk to the surrounding community is imminent, YSS will follow our duty to warn and alert neighbors as warranted. Well, my question is, how are they going to do that if they don't even have our numbers and they won't put something like this in place? Are you going to drive around and warn everyone? And if you're at a 15-to-1 staff ratio, who's going to do that? The one? So there's some real concern right there on their inability to implement that. Secondly is in the area of liability. Currently, of course, they obviously carry liability insurance, which is pretty self-evident. But what we're asking is to make sure that the adjoining neighbors are also added as insured on their liability. This is something that's done commonly. If you lease a building, you have to add someone else in as additional insured, and there's any number of areas where this is done. And if they don't do this, of course, the practical aspect is if someone runs off the property and, for instance, breaks into the neighbor's place, then in order for us to be made whole again, we have to turn around and go to court and sue them to their liability policy. We shouldn't have to do that. That is a shift from their liability onto us that we never asked for. Third area is in operating procedures. We've asked that for most of the standard operating procedures at the facility that they be made public. If they're not, you know, then we're just going on their word that they're following their standard operating procedures, and we have no idea what they even are. Fourth is to publish operating statistics, and in particular so that we know what the situation is with elopements. If it is as low as they say and hope it is, that's great. Publish that. But if that number is high, we as neighbors have the right to know that. And in particular, I'll come back to that one part in a minute. And the fifth is in property crime and in having some sort of a resource officer in the neighborhood. Because we live way at the far end of the county out there, if there's a problem out there that requires law enforcement, you know, we may have Story County Sheriff's deputies that have to come from 20 or 30 minutes away for a facility that's just a short distance of 800 or 1,000 feet to these various properties. That's going to be too long. Beyond that, there are any number of high schools that have resource officers around. So it doesn't seem to me like that's a boundary that's too high to have. Sixth is some sort of review. I would add in here, I have biennial in here. It was stated as biannual. Biennial is every other year. Biennial is twice per year. But just at some point, there should be a condition put in place where if there's problems with the neighbors, that the neighbors have a place that we can come at the county level to talk about that and to get have some recourse to look at that. Right now, yes, they are they're accredited by other institutions, but those other institutions aren't going to care if there's, for instance, too much noise coming over the neighbor's boundaries. They're not, those, you know, the DHS, CARF, those other institutions, they don't care about that. Only you guys as a Board of Adjustment and also as a zoning and planning people can do anything about that. Seven is sex offenders. This has been alluded to earlier. That, again, they will not say that they won't have sex offenders in the program. To me, that should be pretty self-evident when there's not even a perimeter fence or anything around there. And also that they don't want to alert us if somebody walks off the property. And beyond that, now that they're going up to 25 years old, if you're 25 years old and you're in a program like this and you're not court mandated, you could probably walk right off the property and there's nobody to stop you. If you're 16 or 17, at least you have to have your parents' authority to leave the program. But at 24, 25, they could walk out. So the fact that, you know, they're going to think about even allowing sex offenders in the program is, to me, intolerable. And along with that, number eight is a strict upper age limit. I think they were talking about 18. To me, if they were 19, I would be fine with that, but no older than that. And finally, the last one is on property value. We would like to see something put in place so that they can't build buildings right up next to our property line. And we figured 300 feet, and there's plenty of space out there that they could build and still stay 300 feet from the existing facilities or the existing neighbor's dwellings. So those are my comments. Any questions? Me?
No. Morton. Thank you, Mr. Morton. Next.
I'm Kim Christensen at 2985 South Dakota Avenue. We have about a quarter of a mile that's contiguous to the property to the east. Quite a few things have been discussed. the first thing I think I will talk about is the stability, which is one of the main goals that Jerry had brought up. I believe that this project will, for the first time in a long time, add stability to our area, to our neighborhood. The city, yes, has threatened that they would like to annex us, but they have a sewer that's over a mile away, you know, and they have no interest in spending money in doing that. They want a developer to do it. But they do want to have control of this area as much as they possibly can. Somehow the county gave up our rights as owners in the county to have the city, and I'm not sure exactly how it worked, but this fringe area, the 2 mile fringe area, the city has decided that they're going to do some things in part of the fringe 2 mile area and not in others. In our area, they have decided to put all sorts of restrictions on the property owners that you cannot divide your land into two parcels. If you have a lot every place else in the county, you can divide it into two parcels, but not in this particular southwest corridor, because they want to have some kind of stranglehold on people like Doug, who is trying to sell his property. We didn't know when he built his house 11 years ago that by putting it on a 75-acre lot that he wasn't going to be able to split off 20 acres and sell his house. But the city decided that's the case. There's been another area down with Sanders down below on Dartmouth area or in that area where it's just a well on one piece of property. And what they asked those people to do is say, listen, you can, we'll let you do it, but you have to sign this agreement that when we want you in the city, you have to come into the city. And any future owner has to agree to that. So there lies a particular problem that the city has created in tremendous instability. And that's partly where the problem was with the person that was trying to sell their property, that they couldn't get it sold because of the instability of what's coming in the city, is it not coming in the city, what was going to happen around it. This project, well, I was tickled to hear this. First of all, YSS, for those of us who have been in Ames for 40 years, remember when it was in its infancy, we've seen it grow. It's completely controlled by almost who's who in Story County. And you have all sorts of access if you have problems or concerns with YSS, and it's done a tremendous job. Nobody takes any argument with that. We all know that. But for it to have the interest in developing what we are out there for, the country, the environment, keeping the trees, enjoying that wildlife, and not having the city any closer than we can possibly have it, so we can have those beautiful big lots that keep it private for us, it's a perfect fit for us. I mean, it's like a glove hand kind of fit, because they want the same exact things that all of the neighbors practically around there, including Polensky's. You know, that's what they said they wanted. If it comes into the city, there'll be apartments right next to them, or at least 3.4 houses per acre. And if they're talking about noise or concern about any kind of privacy, they're not going to have it from that particular standpoint. That all creates instability. This project will create stability for the whole area. I think it will also, as a result, will increase property values. I think it will be good because of the stability and the fact that we'll have our, at least for the homes that are built now. The city has already decided we can't subdivide or split a lot, so we can't build two houses on a lot that we have now. So that can't be done. But so it won't increase its value as far as being developable property, but it will increase its value as far as being agricultural and country property. So I think that as far as the peaceful enjoyment, I just don't have a problem. I have faith in YSS, and I believe that by them getting the opportunity to get going, that I'm not sure. I think the different things that John brought up are certainly reasonable things. And maybe there needs to be an outlet of communication that we can all be involved with. As far as me getting a text each time, you know, one of their people run across a highway or something, would be a little bit unnerving. That, like when we first put in our burglar system, you know, in our house, we started getting false alarms. Pretty soon you get scared of anything that happens because the dang thing goes off. So I'm not sure I'd want to know every time something gets done. But there needs to be a safeguard. in a way to keep things safe. The fire protection and fire consistency, I think the key to those of us who live in the country, I don't think very many of us expect our houses to be saved by the fire department if they should catch on fire. The key to the fire is prevention. And I think the way that they will build their facilities out there and probably the home that's already built there is so much beyond what already exists in the neighborhood that that's the key to fire protection. So I think that is pretty much all I need to add.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Leonard Larson, and I live on South Dakota Avenue, just right here, in this little housing area. And my son has an 8-inch right over here on County Line Road. And my grandchildren live there as well. Okay, I just have a couple questions. I'm on the United Community School Board. My first question is, will this property be taken off the tax rolls as a nonprofit? Can someone answer that?
Likely, yes.
Okay. So there is more of a burden for fire, police, health, and education. As Kim said, as far as fire goes, we know our homes are at risk. And as I understand it, there isn't a fire station that's capable of serving this area from Ames if they had to. The closest one is by the college. Okay, so that's something that needs to be concerned. Okay, what I basically want to talk about is if this was Joe Blow's gas station and taxidermy, there would be some questions about this land use. YSS, and we all agree, is a proud institution helping people. And we've seen the people talk here and last time at planning and zoning. My wish for you three is to look this over and pay heed to the neighbors that are directly affected by this. And then hear their concerns and try to build those into your plan rather than just steamrolling this through. All right, that's all I've got to say. Thank you.
I'm Phil Isevely. I'm at 3108 South Dakota Avenue. I live right in the creek bottom. I think it's right in here someplace. Leonard lives up the hill from me. I feel like most of the individuals in here, I have no problems with the services and the things that YSS provide. What I am concerned about and was mentioned earlier is you read through all the documents that we have so far, and it says the DNR is the ones that are ultimately going to talk about the sewer. When the city was going to put their $1 million sewer through Worley Creek, it was going to go right through and about 20 feet in front of my house. Okay? And we all got together and we argued and blah, 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 and talked to the city. And there were studies done, and the final result was that the sewer, if it's developed out here, and if the DNR now says, you guys have got to put in a sewer line, first of all, I don't know who's going to pay for it. I don't think the city's going to go, oh, yeah, we like you guys, and put it in. They're probably going to put the burden on these guys. But anyway, what they're supposed to do is go down along the gravel, the existing gravel road, come down South Dakota to the south, and then Iowa State, and I'm sure everybody knows this already, Iowa State owns all this ground up here. I use Iowa State as a general term, because everybody knows there's three entities at Iowa, at Iowa State, the foundation, Iowa State itself, the Ag Committee, all these different groups that own these pieces of property. They're not just Iowa State. But anyway, at that meeting, it was finally decided by the city, after they spent over $75,000 on a study, that the sewer line would go right down the main lane at the Curtis Farm, over to State Street, then down State Street, and then hook up to the line that comes up from Kelly. Anyway, if that ever happens, if that's what they do and say, you guys have got to do this, I will be the first one at the city council meeting waving that document to the city council. So I don't think that's much of a concern. What concerns me is there are a lot of pieces here that we don't know about, and please correct me if I'm wrong. This proposal at this point has to be approved by you guys before anything else can be done. They can't submit. How can they go forward and bring in building plans? Find out from the DNR, you know, do they need a sewer, and so on, so on, so on. Is that correct? So you guys have to say yes, and then all these other questions that have come up will be addressed at some point. Right? Okay. The other thing I would keep in mind here, I'm a little bit concerned about the elopement and that kind of thing, how many of these what's the difference? We've living in this, where we do, in the creek, we've had people come down there from Iowa State, and they say, oh, look at this place, it looks like a park, and they decide to have a picnic. And then we come home from town, and there they are down there. It's kind of like, and we've had stuff stolen out of our barn. We used to have horses, we had saddles stolen, so on and so on. The other issue is, concern for fire. Bob Finch isn't here today, but he was at the last meeting and said that they had not been contacted. It sounds like now there's been some discussion about with the West Story Fire Department. Story County Sheriff's Department is quite a ways away, and they are woefully understaffed. I had some guy come down my driveway and about run me over here about 3 weeks ago, and it took the sheriff deputy over 45 minutes to get to our place. He was up at by Gilbert is where he was at. And when he was there at 10 o'clock in the morning, he said there's only two deputies in the whole county. So they're woefully understaffed. You guys know that already anyway. So that's another concern. Yet I do see the city of Ames police come up and down, and I don't know what they're doing out there, but they're there. Anyway, the other issue that I've seen that has just come up, whatever this road is here, 500th Avenue, right up there at the corner, Lincoln Way, the city has just approved 850-bed apartment complex for students. So, this whole area, it's been a target by the city. The other thing, too, back to the sewer, part of the agreement that was done with the city as far as the sewer is concerned, since we are at the bottom of the hill, okay, they want to put the sewer line here on Dartmoor. That's their proposal, to feed this area, okay? Then, that's the long term, to clear this area. They want to put another sewer line to clear that area. Well, since we're at the bottom of the hill, we have to agree that if we ever have to do anything for sewer and these two branches are put in, then we will have to put a pump to pump our sewage to the top of the hill. And so we said, sure, we'd do that, because by the time that happens, we might not even be here. But anyway, these meetings that we're having right now are all preliminary. Until you guys say yes or no, these guys can't do anything else. The other thing is, like everybody says, our biggest concern as a group, I feel, is we want to keep the city's 2 cents out of this. They already put their fingers in all over the place here. And so we just, that's our big concern. We don't want them to come out there and tell us, oh, you guys can't touch a tree, you guys can't burn your stuff, you know. We don't need to hear that. We're living out there because that's where we want to live. And we own that piece of property since 1975, down at the bottom of the hill. So, anyway, thank you.
Thank you. Others? Andrew, anything you want to address after listening? Any other comments? Staff or board, any questions?
No.
I've got a couple as I've listened to this. One for you, Andrew, and there's a lot of moving parts here. And I've got a background of, I have been quasi on the outside involved with YSS on different occasions. In this whole project, is this all preliminary? Because the moving parts I'm talking about, for example, you agree to purchase something, and I'm also coming at it from my background. You agree to purchase something, you're in it by contract, you find out that there is a major sewer problem, and you're already locked down, and all of a sudden you may end up with a piece of property that you can't do anything with. I think those last comments were brought up, as well as Ms. Owens' comments. Do you have a fair idea on the sewer situation?
Yeah, we've talked to IODNR and got specific preliminary approval to service this with a septic system, so we're not planning on.
Okay.
This will be a septic system.
All right. Next question I had, it comes down really to the question about environmental. Fire protection. What is the, you had discussions.
Back in September of last year when we were looking at multiple sites. We knew this was United Community School District. We knew this was, you know, serviced by the sheriff, and we knew that Kelly was the fire district. So back in September, I reached out, left a message, got a return phone call from a woman that apparently had relayed our conversation to the chief. And she was just pleased as punch that anybody had reached out so far in advance, you know, indicating that generally they get a call when it's time to do the inspection. So my commitment to her was to keep them abreast of the plans as they developed them. The last gentleman spoke's right, you know, it's the chicken or the egg. You know, I don't want to put a lot of money into plans and hiring engineers and architects to the extent that we're not able to use this property for said purpose. Once we get the okay to use the property for said purpose, Doug and I are going to, you know, draw up a contract and we're going to close on the property. We're not closing on the property until we know we can use it for this use. The was a preliminary conversation with the fire department. I sent Jerry forwarded me the letter from the chief. I got his cell phone. I left a message last week. I haven't heard back. I called Kelly Fire Department again. I left them a message. I haven't heard back. I had an early conversation with Sean Bayouth, who's the chief of police with the city of fire chief for the city of Ames, and he talked about, you know, and this is all again preliminary, hasn't happened yet, but he talked about 2080 agreements that they've got with the city of Nevada, for instance, to, you know, for fire protection at I-35 and Highway 30. It's faster for them to get there than it would be somewhere else. So I've talked to Xenia. Xenia said they can provide that they service lots of facilities that are sprinkled. You know, our project will be sprinkled. Our project will meet, you know, everything from an accreditation standpoint, a licensing standpoint, from a fire protection standpoint. We feel good about that.
Thank you. Jerry, I have one question to you that was raised earlier. Just verify to me that all the necessary preliminary announcements or postings and everything were completed as per regulation.
It started with the text amendment that we did. I mean, that's right. What started this whole process. We followed the state requirements for publishing the notices in the three papers that the county has adopted. And as far as the considerations, it went through the full review process, starting with conceptual review, which is the county departments providing input into it. with the Planning and Zoning Commission and ultimately to the Board of Supervisors, and it was reviewed at three separate considerations before.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any questions? Board, ready to deliberate?
I'm interested in the text alert, and I don't know who that should be addressed to, but it seems like that's a fairly simple thing for those who are interested to accomplish, but I'm not certain if this is the correct time to...
When I first saw that, too, I thought, maybe we can do that. The more that I dug into it, it's not best practice. It's not the right policy. I've got my policy person here, Belinda. She can address it if you want. Here's the thing, what you need to know is to be accredited by CARF, we've got to follow specific policies and procedures. And we're happy to open our books and to share. Some of it's proprietary, so I don't want to publish it on a website, but I'm happy to sit down with John and walk him through those things. We are held accountable by Iowa Department of Public Health on really specific things and held accountable on policy by the accrediting body. We have really specific rules about how we address any critical incident. I said on the front end, thanks again, Max, I said on the front end that we're not going to take kids that we feel like are at risk. We don't. A kid can't be court ordered to our program, and we have to take them. We have the ability to screen everybody on the front end. So once we've decided to admit them to the program, we follow very strict policies and procedures as it relates to any potential critical incident. We assess the situation. If we need to involve law enforcement, we do. And then if we thought there was imminent risk, we have a duty to warn policy that we follow, that we would share, that if we felt there was imminent risk to any of the neighbors, we would, John, definitely get your cell phone. I've got pretty much everybody else's. But we would follow those procedures in order to warn the neighbors if there was imminent risk. But I'm not ready to add a text amendment or a text alert to the code, given that we address that in our policies.
And I think part of it is making sure that as we look at our policies and procedures for where we will be, that we involve the different environments, and that we really take a look and assess what is going to be the needs of everyone. So we will be doing that anyway as we use the facilities. Look at what
that
means to change.
Okay. Any questions? Not hearing any, I believe we'll move into deliberation. The difficult part of this is several of your arguments we may personally agree with, we may have concerns with, and a lot of cases, I think, in this one, we've run into it before. I think if communication with the neighbors are out there, I think some of these can be, wouldn't want to say not averted, but some of them can be minimalized. Our job is to basically look at what we feel the requirements of the law and interpret them first. Enforce, interpret them as such. So based on what we see, questions, comments?
I guess I would have a question, in regards to that. I know we're looking at that, and we've heard concerns, obviously, on both sides, but are there typically any provisions? And one of the concerns was how close can it build to the property line? Is there typically something in that?
Sure. In the zoning ordinance, it's an A1 district, so a use like this would typically have a 50-foot minimum front yard, side yard, and rear yard setback.
Okay.
Where they're showing these proposed buildings, though, they're centrally located on that 74-acre parcel, and again, in proximity to existing adjacent dwellings, the range is anywhere from 750 feet to over 1,900 lineal feet based on what was shown for the treatment building, for the residential housing facilities.
So if you were in the future buildings, then you're going to go through the whole CUP process again regardless?
It depends on what the use is. What you're looking at is, you need to consider the written information that was submitted in addition to the site plan sketch, and that's what's being requested. With a CUP, it can be something that's considered a major modification, a minor, or an insignificant modification. Major and minor modifications go through a certain process. Majors go through conceptual review, planning and zoning commission, and then ultimately board of adjustment. If it's a minor modification, it's reviewed by staff, the departments, and then it goes to the board of adjustment. Something that's insignificant would be just an internal review. So it really depends on what they're proposing to do. The first thing is what they're proposing to do, does it meet the requirements of the A1 district, and then we go from there.
And the answer to that is yes, correct?
Well, it depends on what they're proposing to do. Right now it's an adolescent male youth addictions treatment facility, and that's the request that's before you.
Okay.
Board, what do you want to do?
Again, in case you might want me to summarize that. Planning and Zoning Commission at their meeting on March 1st did recommend approval. It was a 6-0 vote with those three conditions that I went through. I'd be happy to go through them again, but they did recommend approval with a 6-0 vote. They're recommending that you approve this request as presented with those three conditions.
And can you flash back to those three conditions, please?
Would you like me to read them?
No.
Okay. One deals with dust control, the other one deals with lighting, and the last one is not being able to build within the floodplain.
I think we all understand the three conditions.
Yes.
Well, both of you, one of the speakers said that this really gets the ball rolling or gets it off the ground. A lot of the discussions and a lot of the things cannot be done until they get approval to do it, to know if they are going to do it.
Mm-hmm. And will PNC see the designs of the buildings? I know that was the concern that Mr. Lozier brought up about the compatibility and the look of the housing for the youth. Is that something that you would see, that you could say, it doesn't really match the style of the property that's existing?
Yeah, they'll go to the staff. They'll be submitted to the Planning and Development Department. We'll route it to all the departments in the county for review and input. And then site development plans do go to the Board of Supervisors, not the Planning and Zoning Commission.
So they're not going to look like the panels for
it should be consistent with the information that was provided in the staff report.
Okay. I move that the Story County Board of Adjustment recommends approval of the conditional use permit as put forth in case CUP 0117 with the three conditions recommended by the Story County Planning and Zoning Commission.
Motion by Scarlett.
I would second that.
Second by Brady. Roll call, please.
McGill.
Aye.
Scarlett.
Aye.
Brady.
Aye.
There you go. Okay, back to our agenda. Any other business coming here before the board?
Yes, so something that I wanted to bring to your attention. I think Stephanie provided an email to you. The Iowa State University Extension and Outreach Office is providing some training for planning and zoning, local government officials. A pretty worthwhile session. The county is willing to pay for this if you're interested. They're offering several sessions, but the ones that are closest to us would be April 18th in Waterloo, and April 24th in Johnston. And if you're interested, just get in contact with Stephanie or myself. Call us, email us, and let us know if you're interested, and we'll make the arrangements for you. But I do have a brochure if somebody'd like to.
Is that a Wednesday? That
pardon me?
Is that a Wednesday?
Actually, the 18th is a Tuesday, and Johnson is on the 24th, that's a Monday. And we will have staff at the Waterloo and or the Johnson.
Where is Johnson?
It says Hilton Garden.
Oh, I know.
8600 North Park Drive.
Okay.
And you like this? I think that brochure has a brochure also.
That covers both our either or Waterloo Johnson stadium.
Yeah, and there's other ones offered. You can go to, you know, there's a view in Fairfield, Fort Dodge, Davenport, Council Bluffs.
And the county will pay my mileage?
Well, we'll pay for the.
Because then you can go to the view.
I'm going to the one in Hawaii.
Oh, okay. So.
I'm there. Where? When?
Yeah, really.
I think that date's open.
Let's get on here. I know about it. All right.
It's a special training just for Jerry.
Question for you, Jerry. We were talking about as far as the members on the board, there's three of us here today. Is there any talk of finding a fifth member to supplement this? Because we're, you know, you run into this today. And
Information is out. I think on our website, we do have some applications that are being reviewed by the staff in the Board of Supervisors office, and the goal is to get somebody appointed very soon.
Okay.
Does the application talk about the parties we have and how much fun we have?
Yeah. It's word of mouth.
Okay. Well, come in with a call.
If somebody's interested, have them contact me. We'll get the application.
So has it ever happened that you postponed the meeting because of?
When I was in Polk County, it would happen occasionally. But we do appreciate knowing from you if you're going to be on vacation or out of town, if you're ill, to let us know that so that we can make arrangements. Like Stephanie was thinking outside the box and possibly calling somebody else and maybe doing a through electronic means, which is legal.
Yeah,
we certainly would have done that if we
could
have. That's all I have for you.
Alrighty. Anything else?
Any more tough ones like this coming up?
This is a good one.
Yeah.
And we'll get into the nitty gritty. I don't know how much we can talk about this. It's all about. We'll get into the nitty gritty, you know, the zoning permit information.
Move adjourn.
Second.
Thanks. Yeah. Motion. We'll adjourn the meeting.
Yeah.